Raith Rovers were in the big time. And to get in to get back there now, there's not many wee teams in a wee part of Scotland get to play in that.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the CSI Football Podcast, where we embark on a forensic delve into a particular season of football, usually with a tartan tint. I'm your host, Ian Stephen, and for today's episode, we're meeting a man who conquered the Celts in a cup final and battered Bayern, one half at least. It's Ali Graham. Ali, how's life treating you?
Really well, Ian, although I wish I could get to some more football games, but this winter I'm quite pleased to be sitting watching it in the comfort of my own home instead of getting out and about. But love the football, love talking about it, love talking to my pals about it, who most of them are all different supporters of different teams, so very interesting getting their views as well as my own, of course.
Well, that is a question we're going to have to ask you about what your particular team is. But it's good to hear that you still enjoy football. A lot of players played football because they were good at it, not because they love it. So it's good to see people that are still kind of in love with the game.
I think Ian as well. You know, a good old pal, I mean, Willie Pettigrew, who was absolutely sensational way back in the day. You know, I just wonder how much he'd be worth now, to be honest with you. But he always used to have a wee kind of gripe about modern day players. And you know, he said I could only heather the ball, you know, and things like that. And I knew he was only joking with his, but you do get frustrated watching some of the modern day players, especially when you watch over the border and the amount of money that these guys are earning now, you know. But the squads are bigger, of course, as well. And there seems to be this big divide in Scotland compared to England with that situation. But it is a frustration sometimes when you're watching teams. And I don't know how they've got excuses, because the balls are better. The parks look bowling greens, some of the parks. Although the 4G is not a big pal of mine.
Well, you might be the best person to ask this question to. The most informed striker in Scotland at the moment, Bojan Majovski at Aberdeen. And there was rumours that Celtic were maybe wanting to pay 1 to 2 million for him, maybe take him in the January window. Maybe a symptom of how finances work in Scotland. How much do you think he would be worth if he was moving from, say, a Serie A club to an English Premier League club?
Well, we've had this argument, me and a couple of my pals, and there's no doubt. I watched Celtic last night. I watched Maeda try to control the ball inside the box. He miscontrolled it. He was onside. I watched the other, Ida, doing the same thing. And I just thought to myself at the time, Majovski might have controlled that and banged it away. But you've just got to look across to the capital as well. And Shankland's banging in the goals as well. He scored another wonderful goal last night, Ian, as well, for Hearts. So there's two informed strikers, which I think a slight difference in age. I think Shankland's maybe going to settle on his contract at Hearts. Good, decent championship player in England for me. But Majovski, I think, could play. Well, you're not telling me he couldn't play for a Sheffield United, the Premier League, or any of these teams. If he did, and if he was playing in Serie A, you're looking £15-17 million for these players.
That's for a club like Aberdeen, that's a new stadium built.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I can understand at times why Celtic wouldn't have paid the money, or Rangers for that matter. But I think it's a chance miss for them, because somebody says to me they'll just wait to the end of the season now for a Shankland or a Majovski. They could be the difference in winning a title, or obviously, you know, getting into the Champions League.
Yeah. So I'm going to have to ask you a personal question.
Yep.
Do you have a middle name?
Yes, I do. And it's a good Irish name.
Could you tell us your middle name?
Yes, my name's Alistair Slowey Graham.
That's like the coolest middle name for a striker ever.
Well, if I was slow, wouldn't I? But I wouldn't, I'll be honest with you, I wouldn't tell anyone out there, because they're a hardy bunch.
So where were you born and brought up?
I was born in Glasgow. I was born in, the Queen Mother's Hospital.
Snap.
In the Queen Mother's Hospital. And we lived in Govan for a short time, 6 or 7 months before we moved to Royston Hill, where I learned to play football. And the gratitude for my mum and dad bringing me up there is brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Loved it.
for maybe kids of a younger generation don't understand it, but you might not have been brought up playing football, especially school football, on grass pitches. Would that be correct?
I think there was broken bottles from the gangs fighting at the Glen Connor football parks across the road. Although I was very, very fortunate, Ian, and honestly, very fortunate to have outside my Ur High flats, there was an Ash football park.
When you were growing up, as the one in Glasgow, there's usually a pull towards one of three, maybe four clubs if you live in the south side. Was there a certain gravitation in your side?
I, at the age of 8, 9 year old, and I know there'll be mothers and fathers out there kind of think to themselves, well, how did they manage to do that? I used to walk it for Royston Hill to Celtic Park to watch Kenny Dalglish. He was my hero, still is my hero. Although I actually enjoyed watching Danny McGrain just as much. I just loved him. I loved the attacking fullback. I just think modern day players, he was a modern day player way back in the 70s. And a fantastic guy and what a player.
Yeah, he was absolutely brilliant. Was there any sniff from some of those Glasgow clubs when you were at school? Because you started your career at Clyde Bank.
Yeah.
Were you a sought after football star, or was it a harder road to get into the game?
I don't think moving to East Kilbride from Glasgow kicked it off for me, although I did play for the school team, Rosemount Primary in Royston Hill when I was 8 year old. I can't remember if it was a janitor or one of the teachers. Remember his name, Mr. Taylor. And it's quite funny, I've actually got a good story about that, because my pal, one of my colleagues at Hamilton Accies, Brian McPhee, went to the same school, and Mr. Taylor took his team as well a number of years later. So he had an eye for a player, I think, Mr. Taylor. But my first game, I got asked to play at the Glen Connor Black Ash football parks in Royston Road. And there was more boulders on that ash than ash, Ian. And I had a pair of wedges on. My mum had to come down my football boots at half time. And I ripped the side of them. And I was more concerned about ripping the side in my wedges than the 3-0 defeat for St. Rocks, who absolutely battered us. And I've been scared for that ever since. I've actually been getting a drinking.
Well, I used to play in goals, and Jim Leighton was my hero. So I had a pair of Roche goalkeeper gloves, got them for Christmas. And then I realised that if I played in the Ash pitches, I would get them hammered. So I refused to save the ball with my hands when I played in goals. So that didn't last as a goalkeeper very long.
Well, funny enough, I actually started in goals. I've got a confession to you. It was for the BB. It was the Garngad BB. And I was in goals. And it was in the days when I played. So I'm looking for a date here. It must have been 74, 75. It was actually gardening gloves with Velcro on them. They weren't the real goalie gloves. So my gran got me them for my birthday and my Christmas, and I'm in goals for the BB, and we beat 21-0. 21-0 with these guys. I don't even know where they were from. Bullied. And my dad says, I think you should maybe try outfield. So I just started playing outfield. I didn't fancy the goalkeeping game.
Well, tell us about joining Clyde Bank then, because they're a club that, they were iconic at the time. They produced some fantastic players. David Cooper was one of the famous players that came out of there. What was your time like at Clyde Bank?
Well, before that, I played with a footballer called Kevin Ingalls in East Kilbride, and we moved up to East Kilbride. And at 13, 14 years of age, St Mirren signed us. So we went to St Mirren. The time of Alex Ferguson going to Aberdeen, he took us up there as well. So there was a bit of to and fro between the two clubs. Mm-hmm. Every school holiday went up to Aberdeen. And me and Kevin stayed with St Mirren. I went to Aberdeen, then I went back to St Mirren. But they wanted to step us into I was playing 2 years above my age. They wanted to make it back to 16s, and I felt I was big enough and strong enough to go higher, you know, and start my career. So Kevin said to us, why don't you come down to Annie's Land United? We're affiliated with Clyde Bank. So I left St Mirren for about a year. I was kind of floating about. I'm going 17, 18, now 16, 17. And Big John Arrow, ex-Clyde goalkeeper, was the manager of Annie's Land United. And I went there with Kevin. There was a couple of boys signed with Clyde Bank there. Big Paul McLaughlin, left back, Celtic and Partick Thistle. Jerry Craney, no Jerry Craney, the one you know, another one. He was signed with St Mum from before he went to Clyde Bank. And a couple of others, and I loved it. And we won absolutely everything. And before I knew it, Jack Steedman got a hold of me and desperate to sign me. I think we won the Scottish Cup, the league, for a couple of seasons. Right into reserve football for there. You played for Arriesland and you played for the reserves during the week. And I was banging in goals for the reserves. So kind of, that's how it started.
Quite a few kind of senior professionals in that Clyde Bank squad as well. I think Jerry McCabe was there.
Aye, still pally with Jerry, yeah.
Jim Gallagher in goals.
Brilliant.
Was that a very kind of formative experience as you as a kind of kid?
I thought I was the bee's knees. You know, the dogs, I thought it was, you know. I get my debut, a couple of reserve games. They didn't faze me, because in the reserve games in the 80s, Ian, you were playing against Alex Brash, you know, Gregor Stevens, Roddy McDonald, all these guys, all these experienced pros, Dougie Bales, brilliant players, brilliant. And a bit daunting, you would think. Didn't faze me. But I made my debut against Clyde. You beat 2-1, Derek Fry scored 2, I think Jerry Ronald pulled one back for us. And I got absolutely bullied with Paul Flexney and Brian Ahern, sweeper. Couldn't get the ball. When I controlled the ball, Brian was coming in front of me, taking off me. And I got schooled. And that was a massive lesson for me. And one that I was a sub a couple of times. And I couldn't break through. I couldn't get into the team. Don't forget as well, the style of play they had was one up front, really. We were runners, and I was near a runner, you know. So it didn't suit my style. I managed to get a couple of appearances in the Premier League the next season.
Uh-huh.
But Mike Lanark, who was there, he came from Newcastle United. He was brilliant with me. Just told me to work in my game, holding the ball and laying it off, getting into the box. So there was guys there, Mark Traynor. He actually threatened me for not holding the ball up, because for these guys at the time, the win bonus was their week's best messages. You know, that was what it was all about in the days. So it was a real, real hard learning curve for me.
Well, you were talking about your style. There's maybe people that are a bit younger that didn't get a chance to see you play firsthand. And this is a question you ask of a musician, and they'll never give them the answer. Like, who would you compare yourself to? But if you're a footballer, who's a footballer from kind of modern times that you would have a similar style to, do you think?
Is there many is going about? I don't think there's many going about now. I mean, it's definitely not Haaland. There you go. I mean, he's a freak. I mean, absolute freak.
Sure interview, Ali.
Pace, everything. Aye. So I don't know. I just don't know. I look down in England. I do think it's changed where, Ian, I went down to Sheffield United for a couple of months when I was at Albion Rovers. And I watched their game down there. I looked at the players. And the guy, Jeff Pike, that played for West Ham in Notts County. We played Notts County in a pre-season friendly. And he came up and said to me after the game, walk me off. Where are you down from? I told him, there's not many players like you in this league. What they tend to do in these leagues is go over the top. It's always a ball at the midfield, back and into the corners. I was playing with Brian Dean and Tony Agana at the time. There's a guy in midfield called Jim Gannon who played tremendous left foot. And it was a Wimbledon-style Sheffield player. It was Dave Bassett.
Aye.
And I says, well, hopefully he'll see, you know, I can do that. But nothing came of it. He came up to watch me against Aberdeen in the League Cup for Albion Rovers. And I was up against McLeish and Miller.
Oh, that's easy. You'd have them in your back pocket.
So, the two best centre-backs. And in fact, I can't imagine if Miller was playing. It might have been David Robertson who played in there, who went for a lot of money as well. And I thought, I'm not going to get a kick of the ball. And I didn't, because of the style of play. Excuse me. A lot of people forget, and a lot of supporters forget as well. And we talk about it a lot. 60, 70 minutes, you're a guy up top, yourself, playing against these guys. You get subbed because you've ran out of steam, ran out of legs, ran out of ideas. The manager needs to change it. It's always good for a guy to come on and maybe that freshness, but the guy that gets off gets forgotten about in the 60, 70 minutes, and it's a tough gig. It's a tough gigging, you know. So I appreciate any guy that plays up there himself and going from side to side, trying to get fullbacks to play them in.
look at the game now. Look at the wingers now. The wingers don't cross the ball into the box. They don't. Man City have only changed their style since Haaland's come in. I've watched wingers now getting to the byline or even one-on-one. When I was coaching, if they didn't take the winger on, they would be off. The full-back on, they would be off. It seems to go from there back to the centre-backs, out the other side, back to the centre-backs. Back. So the centre-forwards made three or four runs by this time. And for me, modern that modern type football, for me, that wouldn't suit me one bit.
It's frustrating because you see the perfect opportunity for a winger to get a ball in quickly.
Yeah.
Because the defence are backtracking, he pauses, everybody stops, and then the defender has the advantage. The striker doesn't have momentum to get up to the ball.
Very frustrating for every supporter as well watching the team.
But you can't go up for a ball now. As soon as you try to head the ball, that's it. Free kick against you, and you're...
I think I would find that quite difficult. I could be really physical if I wanted to be. If I were struggling a wee bit, I would have a word with the manager and maybe a wee put a goalkeeper in a net. I mean, Campbell Money used to say to me, our first corner, every time we played them, when you put me in the net, the day, big man. And sometimes you have to do that to let them think about coming for the next ball. Any goalkeeper. You don't see a lot of that now because they're all jostling in the box and the refs actually stopping the play to warn two guys that are grappling with each other. I've got to say, that all went on when we played. It's no different. You know, you just had to make a run and try and get away. But what I will say is the corners were maybe more held up for guys to attack in these days. Mm. I sound as if I'm an old pensioner, didn't I? Nearly an old pensioner. But, you know, they seem to like this whipped in ball now. But there were guys in our teams that were doing things like that as well. So nothing's changed that much.
Well, you talked about going to Albion Rovers and you're a curiosity as an Albion Rovers player because you won a title.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Rovers have tumbled down the leagues a wee bit. But
that's sad about that, yeah.
What was it like winning that league?
Well, leaving Clydebank, you touched on earlier there, old Jack and Tommy Gemmell. And Tommy Gemmell wanted to sign me. And as soon as I heard that, I thought, well, here we go. So actually, went into town to meet him at his office. And he gave me a couple of £100 and said to me, right, you're on. I says, only thing is, Gaffer, I says, I've booked my holidays. So he was a wee bit unhappy about that, Tommy, you know. And me and my girlfriend, my wife now, still the same person.
You're very quick to kind of...
We had to get that in. Went on holiday with this couple of £100. Shows you a couple of £100 to get you in 8 days. And I come back and I made my debut for Tommy. And the draw of him just getting me over there. And I've always kind of went in my career with guys that I've known at the football teams. The only reason I went there... because I knew Big Tony Gallagher. And Big Tony played there, played with Stuart Rar, big centre-back, East Kilbride boy, great guy. And he says to me, come with us. And Tommy Gemmell and him, and of course Joe Baker, I thought, tell my dad about that one, you know. And it didn't work the first season. It didn't work. But Big Davy Proven came in, another Rangers legend, Big Davy Proven, brilliant, brilliant guy. He's seen something in us, really did. And he was hard on me. There's a couple of times I thought, here we go, we're going to be rolling about the dressing room here. And but he was only trying to make me better. And we had a wee midfielder, Jim Chapman, playing off me. A couple of experienced guys at the back, Mike Oliver, Robert Clark, ex-Ranger, ex-Motherwell player. And I came a group of journeymen. We signed a boy, Paul McKenzie, Wolfie, did he go to Falkirk, from Falkirk? I can't even, like Hamilton Accies maybe, something like that. And he was the grinder in there. He just worked his socks off and won the ball back for us. And I created a lot of chances for Chappie and for me, Paul Teven at the wing and a lot of other boys that played in that team. And we went on a run. And me and Paul McKenzie built up this friendship that we were out every Saturday after a win and for Christmas, I think we were out every single week. And I spoke to you earlier off air about camaraderie and a bond. That team, 100%. The reason we won that league was because of the bond we had, no doubt about it.
Do you still keep in contact with a lot of the players you played with? Because I've had some players tell me, no, I don't keep in touch. I wasn't friends with people I played with.
I wasn't friends with a lot of people. I mean, I wasn't friends with, you know, touch on it later on. I went to Motherwell and that was a big time for me. I mean, Motherwell. I mean, I wanted to enjoy playing football and I didn't enjoy it at Motherwell. I'll tell you that right now. Didn't enjoy it one bit. But there, I see guys here and there bump into at dinners. I done an after dinner thing down at Ayr, and it was the Ayr United team that ran away with the league, Ali McLeod's team. Paul McKenzie was in it, a lot of guys that I'm friendly with, and it was good to see them all again, you know. So you bump into guys in these things. But I'm still friendly with a lot of people, Graham Mitchell, Derek Ferguson, we got Joe Tortolano, people like that I keep in touch with. But obviously some that you just drift away from, but when you do see them, it's great, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Some aging better, more than others, Ian, to be quite honest with you, but we're all getting old.
Well, how did you then move from Rovers to United?
That was Bobby Russell. I always done, we get promoted, obviously, as you touched on, we won the league, we get promoted. And for some reason, played really well against the United. Just played really well against them every time we played them. I think a couple of games were on the telly. And I think Jimmy Nicol was commentating on a couple and co-commentator on a couple of games, couple of League Cup games. Played really well in the games. And that's when I was going down to Sheffield. I thought maybe I've got a chance here. When they come up to watches, obviously, didn't work out. I believe there was a bid on the table. But Ali came in and outbid them. So in their days, you just went where the money was. And unfortunately for me, or fortunate for me, because I wouldn't change a thing. You know, I wouldn't change a thing. Ali McLeod, there you go. So there's a couple of managers, a couple of people I've named for you. And I know when I do speak to older people, they're annoying me talking about that. These guys that I worked under.
Yeah.
And he was just phenomenal.
Well, you're going to have to tell us some stories about Ali.
I mean, actually, this is how I didn't treat football seriously. I didn't. I wasn't interested in money. I just wanted to play the game. I mean that, honestly. And Ali came in to sign me, and we were playing St Mirren at Somerset Park. And this was a Friday. We were, Albion Rovers were actually leaving to go on a pre-season tour up north, Huntley, Elgin, all that kind of stuff. And Ali came in, and so I was to sign. So I signed, I says to him, can I not just go up north with the lads and see you next week, Ali? And he went, you've got a game tomorrow against St Mirren. That's how quick it was. I had to go down to, go and tell my dad, obviously, go down. But that was the final papers. But going in to sign for Ayr was, I went down myself, down to Somerset Park, drove down, went in to see him in the room with the chairman's sitting at one side and Ali's sitting on the other side. But one side of the chairman, he's kind of blindsided by me, he can't really see me or see Ali, because Ali's leaning back in his chair, and he says, how much are you looking for? And I'd never had been asked that question before. I usually just get told what I was getting. Inexperienced, I suppose. And he gave me a number, and I says, no, I want more than that. And he says, well, tell me then. So I told him, because I was going full time. This is me,
yeah,
going full time. This is me, you know, panel beating the trade, going full time to give it a go. Always wanted to give it a go. And again, I knew a lot of boys down there, Tommy Walker playing against them, Feaster Craig, Zanisland. Good players, I mean, really good players. Me, Henry Templeton, brilliant, absolutely fantastic. But I gave him another number, and the chairman says, right, so we can give you that signing on fee, and we can give you that weekly. I'll go in and see the directors are in another room. But meanwhile, Ali's leaning back, and he's putting his fingers up in the air, telling me, going like that, the chairman can't see him. And I'm kind of looking across at Ali, and I'm saying, what's he doing? Right, I didn't know whether he was making faces. I don't know what he was doing. So the chairman went out, and he went, see you, I was trying to get you an extra couple of 100 quid there. Look at me, I'm pointing the figures at you, and I thought, this guy will do for me. But I was raging because I didn't ask for more. So that type of guy, just that type of guy, he could walk into a room. We played Dundee. I think we beat them. I think I scored. We beat them. And we were driving home, and I'm saying to myself, I've got to meet the wife in the town. The Dodge bus used to drop us off at Charing Cross. That's where we used to get. Meet the wife in the town at 7 o'clock. And we're driving. We're late at the dressing room. It's a good victory for us. Dundee had just come down for the the Premier League, and it was a good one. And we're driving back, and Ali just shouted out, "Driver, right, turn into the Swallow Hotel." So he went in, we went into the Swallow Hotel, and the boys are all going, the directors are going, "Come on, just in for one, come on, in for one, lads, good one, come on." The chairman's getting it, right? The chairman's face is chins hit the deck. So the whole squad going. But the Aberdeen players are back for playing in Glasgow. They've just, whatever, Dunfermline or something. And within a minute, every Aberdeen player, every Ayr player, all the guests, the people that were in the hotel were running Ali, and Ali was telling stories. Just had them in the palm of his hand. Had them in the palm of his hand. And that's the way he was as a manager. You just listened to him and you just wanted to do your best for him, you know. Although he did have a kind of volatile relationship with the Ayr supporters. He did have a volatile relationship. You could see it. Because what the supporters down there couldn't imagine, Ian, was they ran away with the league in the second division. They ran away with it. They were brilliant. You know, the players, they had Big Cowley outside left. The centre-forward that was scoring up, Tommy Walker, Templeton was running amok. We Evans in midfield. They were brilliant side. They were really good. But then they stepped up and they didn't realise that they're up a league. They thought they could still run away with it. Big slidding. And they weren't running away, so they gave Ali a hard time. But I'll just tell you this quick story of how infectious he was. See what happened down there? He signed for him. Peter Weir and Tommy Bryce signed. Sammy Johnson came in. We had a good side. Really good side. We should have done better. I think we had a good couple of runs in cups. But league-wise, no, wasn't as good. But pre-season, my first pre-season down there, it was about 70, 75 degrees down at Somerset. It was looking immaculate. The park was always brilliant. It's, you know, always brilliant down there at the start of the season. David Hartnett said it, tremendous. And we were one short reserves against the first team. And Ali went, "I'll go outside left," right? So he had the tracksuit, it was like a rain suit on, and it was 75 degrees. And he played outside left, and he says, "I've got my Umbros on," but it was high tech. It was grey high tech suede trainers he always wore, even more than his suit. He didn't, he thought they were Umbro. So the boys are killing us, they're laughing at that. So we played 40, 45 minutes and he's playing and we're all sweating and what a good workout it was, and he's got one or two touches just laying it off and things, and he walks into the dressing room after it and we're all getting ready to get into the bath or a shower, whatever it was, and Ali takes off his wetsuit and he's got his suit and shirt and tie on under it. I'm away to a meeting in the chairman's house. That was what he was like. He was just incredible. What a guy. Brilliant. Honestly, and some of the stories about the Scotland thing as well, you know, just the way he picked the team and all that were just brilliant. So I was actually disappointed we'd never done a lot better under him. But then, of course, George Burley came in and that was me. I was on my way, as you said. I think you opened the question, how did I get to Motherwell? Well, me, Bobby Russell come down. A couple of players come in for Motherwell. Me, George and me, Tam were best of pals. Obviously, George had played there as well. And Bobby says to me, "You're away to Motherwell today." And I went, "I don't know anything about it. What are you talking about?" Scored a few goals that season, 21 goals. I think I was on a good run in Motherwell and away. And I was in the car and I went up to see Tommy McLean at Fir Park. So that's been 92 season, something around about that.
Just after the Cup one?
Season after.
Yep.
So they were flying. And again, this false thing for the supporters. You know, we can do this all the time. It happens at every club. We'll touch on it later. It happens at every club. You think you're going to be up there all the time. It doesn't work like that. And I went up to see Tom McLean. You walk into his office, it's the biggest office in the world, and you sit down and he says, "Pull the chair up." And I was scared. I didn't know. I didn't have an agent, nothing. Nobody knew anything about agents. There was a couple going about Whitner then, Bill McMurdo, things like that. But I didn't have one, and he told me what I was getting. Simple as that. He told me. And I went, okay. So I left there. And I went and didn't have a mobile phone, and round the corner to Gordon Parks, who used to work with Daily Record, loves this story when I tell him. He says, "What did you do?" I says, "Well, there was a phone box at the end of the street. And I went into the phone box and phoned my wife and told her I've just signed for Motherwell. And she went, "You're kidding." I says, "No." I says, "Do you fancy a Chinese tonight?" That was my celebration.
No matter where you go, there's somebody that just knows you, it just recognises you. And I think as well, I don't know what you think, but I think I've not really changed that much. I think there's a few guys that have played me that have changed, so
it's because you're a big lad and you're still fit, Ali. Yeah. You're in good shape, so it'll click.
My son was down in Manchester for a meet.
Stick that on your lapel.
Yep. He went down to the bar and his wife was still getting ready. Ian. So he went down for a pint.
Aye.
There was two guys sitting and talking about the bully wee. We're talking about the Clyde, you know. And Scott went and got a pint and he says, "You talking about the Clyde? My dad used to play for Clyde." And he went, "Ali Graham's boy." He's my double, he's 6'4". He just got his right away, you know. So I thought, Jesus Christ, Scottish, you're involved in that now and all, you know.
But I was sitting in a pub in Paisley and sitting talking to a couple of lads. And a boy said to me, "What do you think of that Paul Gallagher at Dundee United, that young keeper?" And I was like, "You know what? I think he's outstanding. He's great reflexes. He's really agile. Looks like he's a fantastic player." And somebody else bumped me and went, "He said, that's his dad sitting behind you." Turned around.
I know.
He's one of those...
Great guy. He never changed. Looked the same.
He looked like he should be running a bank.
A goalie. I get you that, because I played with a guy called... it's quite funny, actually. I played with a guy called David Purdy at Ayr United.
I remember David.
Big Purdy. Big Davey, right? And he was a chemist. So... I didn't know that, but I got told that. I went, if ever you could have said somebody was a chemist, it would have been him, because he didn't look like a goalie. He'd always a shirt and tie on. He was always dead clean, a handsome big guy, you know, and you just expect him to be doing something like that, you know, not a football goalie coming out for crosses and things. You need me to move in, or you need me
no,
to...
No, no, sounds good here, so...
Okay, mate.
All righty. I'll do a quick... Right. Do record. Tell me the list of clubs that you've played for.
In order.
It doesn't matter.
Right, okay. Let's go. Clyde Bank, Albion Rovers, Ayr United, Motherwell, Raith Rovers. In fact, I should go back. Is that okay?
Yep.
I should go back to Stenhouse Muir. I played a game for them when I was at Clyde Bank. There you go. And the list goes on, Ian. The list goes on.
Excellent, that's recording. Alrighty. I shall... This is going to be fun. Going to be a lot of fun.
Ah, good.
Right.
You alright with me sipping my coffee? Cool. Right.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the CSI Football Podcast, where we embark on a forensic delve into a particular season of football, usually with a tartan tint. I am your host, Ian Stephen, and for today's episode, we are joined by a League Cup winner, a First Division winner, one of the best big strikers of his generation, still had guile, still had class, it wasn't all about being physical. It's Ali Graham. Ali, welcome very much to the podcast. How are you?
Well, first of all, Ian, thanks for that introduction. That was fantastic. And every single word you said was true there.
It's the first time I've ever been accused of that. What are you doing with yourself nowadays? You're out of football.
I still try to get to some games, working away and doing certain things. I've seen you at a few games, obviously. So, you know, I'm just a working man now and just trying to see out the last couple of years. Before I get my pension, if it's going in the right direction, but football's still a big part of my life. You know, I've got different friends that support different teams, and it's always good to get different views on the game. So,
sorry, can I cut you there?
Yep, no problem.
My fault. There we go. Hello and welcome to another episode of the CSI Football Podcast, where we embark on a forensic delve into a particular season of football, usually with a tartan tint. I'm your host, Ian Stephen, and for today's episode, we're meeting a man who conquered the Celts in a cup final and battered Bayern, one half at least. It's Ali Graham. Ali, how's life treating you?
Really well, Ian, although I wish I could get to some more football games, but this winter I'm quite pleased to be sitting watching it in the comfort of my own home instead of getting out and about. But love the football, love talking about it, love talking to my pals about it, who most of them are all different supporters of different teams, so very interesting getting their views as well as my own, of course.
Well, that is a question we're going to have to ask you about what your particular team is, but it's good to hear that you still enjoy football. A lot of players played football because they were good at it, not because they love it, so it's good to see people that are still kind of in love with the game.
I think Ian as well, you know, a good old pal, I mean, Willie Pettigrew, who was absolutely sensational way back in the day, you know, I just wondered how much he'd be worth now, to be honest with you, but he always used to have a wee kind of gripe about modern day players, and you know, he said I could only heather the ball, you know, and things like that, and I knew he was only joking with his, but you do get frustrated watching some of the modern day players, especially when you watch over the border and the amount of money that these guys are earning now, you know, but the squads are bigger, of course, as well. And there seems to be this big divide in Scotland compared to England with that situation. But it is a frustration sometimes when you're watching teams. And I don't know how they've got excuses because the balls are better. The parks look bowling greens, some of the parks. Although the 4G is not a big pal of mine.
Well, you might be the best person to ask this question to. The most informed striker in Scotland at the moment, Bojan Majovski at Aberdeen. And there was rumours that Celtic were maybe wanting to pay 1 to 2 million for him, maybe take him into the January window. Maybe a symptom of how finances work in Scotland. How much do you think he would be worth if he was moving from, say, a Serie A club to an English Premier League club?
Well, we've had this argument, me and a couple of my pals, and there's no doubt. I watched Celtic last night. I watched Maeda try to control the ball inside the box. He miscontrolled it. He was onside. I watched the other, Ida, doing the same thing. And I just thought to myself at the time, Majovski might have controlled that and banged it away. But you've just got to look across to the capital as well. And Shankland's banging in the goals as well. He scored another wonderful goal last night, Ian, as well, for Hearts. So there's two informed strikers, which I think a slight difference in age. I think Shankland's maybe going to settle on his contract at Hearts. Good, decent championship player in England for me. But Majovski, I think, could play. Well, you're not telling me he couldn't play for a Sheffield United, the Premier League, or any of these teams. If he did, and if he was playing in Serie A, you're looking £15-17 million for these players.
That's for a club like Aberdeen, that's a new stadium built.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I can understand. At times, why Celtic wouldn't have paid the money, or Rangers for that matter. But I think it's a chance miss for them, because somebody says to me they'll just wait till the end of the season now for a Shankland or a Majovski. They could be the difference in winning a title, or obviously, you know, getting into the Champions League.
Yeah. So I'm going to have to ask you a personal question.
Yep.
Do you have a middle name?
Yes, I do. And it's a good Irish name.
Could you tell us your middle name?
Yes, my name's Alistair Slowey Graham.
That's like the coolest middle name for a striker ever.
Well, if I was slow, wouldn't I? But I wouldn't, I'll be honest with you, I wouldn't tell anyone out there because they're a hardy bunch.
So where were you born and brought up?
I was born in Glasgow. I was born in, the Queen Mother's Hospital.
Snap.
In the Queen Mother's Hospital, and we lived in Govan for a short time, 6 or 7 months before we moved to Royston Hill, where I learned to play football. And the gratitude for my mum and dad bringing me up there is brilliant, absolutely brilliant, loved it.
Well, maybe kids of a younger generation don't understand it, but you might not have been brought up playing football, especially school football, on grass pitches, would that be correct?
I think there was broken bottles from the gangs fighting at the Glen Connor football parks across the road. Although I was very, very fortunate, Ian, and honestly, very fortunate to have, outside my high flats, there was an Ash football park.
when you were growing up, as the one in Glasgow, there's usually a pull towards one of three, maybe four clubs if you live in the south side. Was there a certain gravitation in your side?
I, at the age of 8, 9 year old, and I know there'll be mothers and fathers out there kind of think to themselves, well, how did they manage to do that? I used to walk it through Royston Hill to Celtic Park to watch Kenny Dalglish. He was my hero, still is my hero. Although I actually enjoyed watching Danny McGrain just as much. I just loved him. I loved the attacking fullback. I just think modern day players, he was a modern day player way back in the 70s. And a fantastic guy and what a player.
Yeah, he was absolutely brilliant. Was there any sniff from some of those Glasgow clubs when you were at school? Because you started your career at Clyde Bank.
Yeah.
Were you a sought after football star, or was it a harder road to get into the game?
I don't think moving to East Kilbride from Glasgow kicked it off for me, although I did play for the school team, Rosemount Primary in Royston Hill when I was 8 year old. I can't remember if it was a janitor or one of the teachers. Maybe his name, Mr. Taylor. And it's quite funny, I've actually a good story about that because my pal, one of my colleagues at Hamilton Accies, Brian McPhee, went to the same school, and Mr. Taylor took his team as well a number of years later. So he had an eye for a player, I think, Mr. Taylor. But my first game, I got asked to play at the Glenconner Black Ash football parks in Royston Road. And there was more boulders on that ash than ash, Ian. And I had a pair of wedges on. My mum had to come down my football boots at half time. And I ripped the side of them. And I was more concerned about ripping the side in my wedges than the 3-0 defeat for St. Rocks, who absolutely battered us. And I've been scared for that ever since. I've actually been getting a drinking.
Well, I used to play in goals, and Jim Leighton was my hero. So I had a pair of Roche goalkeeper gloves, got them for Christmas. And then I realised that if I played in the ash pitches, I would get them hammered. So I refused to save the ball with my hands when I played in goals. So that didn't last as a goalkeeper very long.
Well, funny enough, I actually started in goals. I've got a confession to you. It was for the BB. It was the Garngad BB. And I was in goals. And it was in the days when I played. So I'm looking for a date here. It must have been 74, 75. It was actually gardening gloves with Velcro on them. They weren't the real goalie gloves. So my gran got me them for my birthday and my Christmas, and I'm in goals for the BB, and we beat 21-0. 21-0 with these guys. I don't even know where they were from. Bullied. And my dad says, I think you should maybe try outfield. So I just started playing outfield. I didn't fancy the goalkeeping game.
Well, tell us about joining Clyde Bank then, because they're a club that, they were iconic at the time. They produced some fantastic players. David Cooper was one of the famous players that came out of there. What was your time like at Clyde Bank?
Well, before that, I played with a footballer called Kevin Ingalls in East Kilbride when we moved up to East Kilbride. And at 13, 14 years of age, St Mirren signed us. So we went to St Mirren. The time of Alex Ferguson going to Aberdeen, he took us up there as well. So there was a bit of to and fro in between the two clubs. Mm-hmm. Every school holiday went up to Aberdeen. And me and Kevin stayed with St Mirren. I went to Aberdeen, then I went back to St Mirren. But they wanted to step us into I was playing 2 years above my age. They wanted to make it back to 16s, and I felt I was big enough and strong enough to go higher, you know, and start my career. So Kevin said to us, why don't you come down to Annie's Land United? We're affiliated with Clyde Bank. So I left St Mirren for about a year. I was kind of floating about. Look at who's left, who's in it, who's not in it. And you can see these teams unfolding. And of course, you're waiting on who you're going to get in the next round.
Well, you got St Johnson in the next round, and a wee trip up to McDermott.
Yeah. And we went up there to stay. I can remember that. I can't remember. It's quite funny that the team bus, Jimmy had booked us into a hotel in this kind of remote place. Not far from Perth, but up that kind of way. I can't remember if it was that game where we actually left David Airy in his room. We left with him.
I mean, so, no, that way, for somebody's all, I can attract you, me or Ronnie Coyle, or somebody, we can turn the head, you know. Jimmy would go, so, and the phone went, David Neary's still at the hotel, weren't you? Imagine forgetting David Neary, I mean. Ah, says, Gaffer, I put a note under his door telling the bus leaves in 5 minutes. That's the only way you can communicate with him. Bus leaving at 5:45, you know, Davy. Sash, bus leaving at 5:45. Then he answers. So the chef had to bring him to the game. The guy, the chef in the hotel, he jumped in his motor and bring it to McDermott Park. And just as well. But that game was... I love watching that game back. I think it's brilliant. I think played really well. Good goals, man. Really good goals. Again, I managed to get a good goal, but me Danny's goal was brilliant at the end, and the supporters then, I think if you watch them, believe that we've got a chance here, man. This is pretty serious. It's not a kid on, you know. This is serious stuff, the way we played. His goal was brilliant. Ran for his own half, I think. Counter-attack, bang. Never tried to get into the game. And he just tucked it away. Brilliant. And unfortunately for him, I think, I can't remember when he got injured, Ian. But me Danny got injured on the lead-up to the final. I don't know if it's a league game or whatever, but he was brilliant that night. But we had a few beers after that game, I'll tell you, because that was us into the semis.
Well, you would think the gods of the draw were kind to you by giving you Airdrie, but
Cup Kings.
They were such a good team when it came to cup games. They were so difficult to play against.
They were a hardy bunch. I've had a few encounters over the years, managed to score against them a few times. But they were a hardy bunch. We knew they were good in the cup. It was quite eerie that night, Ian. I can't remember the reason for it. But coming out for the start of that game, obviously David Kirkman was playing midfield, he's an ex-Airdrie player. We came out, I remember saying to him, but that ended up with full of Airdrie fans, isn't it, wasn't it? Later heard that there was an accident in the motorway and a lot of Airdrie fans hadn't made it through because of the... But it was eerie because our side and the main stand, the cross of the main stand was full. But the Airdrie end was pretty, it's like that. It's a semi final. But Bill Crombie, my old pals, probably sent me off more times than any other ref throughout my career. Done us a right good turn that night and said that Scott Thompson stepped outside the box when he caught the ball. And if you watch it 100 times only, VAR would be able to see now if you want to go down that road, Ian. If he was outside his box, I certainly didn't think he was. But it was a blessing because we Potts came on and managed to get us over the line. I remember David Neary during that game. I says, where's David gone? He's running up the park with the ball, you know. And they played a 1-2 with Daz in the box and it fell to Daz and he laid it off to me and I managed to bury it in the bottom corner. One up. Tomo got sent off. I've got to kind of go back to centre backish. My back's against the wall. Stevie Cooper scores a cracking goal. One each into extra time. We're getting battered. We're battering this. It was just Jimmy Nicol loved the fixed bayonets. You know, let's dig in here. And we managed to hang on to penalty kicks. And me pot saved Alan Launce's penalty to put us through. And it was bedlam.
Were you involved in that penalty shootout?
No, I didn't take the penalties for some reason. And I took them later on in my career. I took them for a lot of teams later on. And I had a good record at taking them. I don't know why. I just don't know why. Maybe Jimmy Nicol did the fancy me if I put me in for him. But that was, people ask me, how do you not take a penalty? And Jimmy had his five. And it was the same five again. So when it was, you know, if it was going to sudden death, obviously you need to step up kind of thing, you know. But all hell broke loose. The Raith fans were all in the park and ran back. Me and Big Sean Dennis ran into the dressing room, giggling like wee kids, just giggling. Broke up a couple of cans of lager and Big Sash came in, Big Davey Neary, and I says to Davey, cup final, Davey. The Raith Rovers, I can't believe it. And it was absolutely brilliant. I mean, brilliant party time. The unfortunate thing for wee Potter was that we went back to the legendary Jackie O's and had a night out in the final. Place was buzzing and he never got in because he was 17.
Oh, shame.
And I said, see you later, Potsy. Well done, son. See you training.
Well, you end up facing what you kind of said was your boyhood kind of team, Celtic. They're the opponents in that League Cup held at Ibrox because Hampden was getting reconfigured. Did you suddenly become one of the most popular men in your social circle? Oh, you get a ticket, big man.
I think I got my family tickets. I think I got the Sloys tickets. I saw the Sloys for Kirkmile and Mount Vernon there. They all turned up, my uncle Pat, and obviously my whole family. And I think they actually sent me the ticket. I've got it in the house. I think it was £7 or something in the days. It might have been cheaper than that, actually. So the family were there. Popularity-wise, no, I had a lot of guys that, a lot of Celtic pals that wouldn't talk to me. But we were confident. I mean, I remember the lead-up to it was great. It was a good build-up. Everybody wanted to talk. You know what it's like. You know, everybody's wanting a wee bit of the action. A lot of managers coming on and writing us off a wee bit. But we just looked at Celtics. Tommy Burns, I mean, Big Billy Stark. Big Billy played under Big Billy a few times and hadn't won in for ages. You know, Rangers were dominating. And we knew we had a chance. And Alec Totten came on, who one of my teams, I didn't have a chance to play under him right enough because of a terrible knee injury. But he kind of wrote us off a wee bit, kind of wrote me off a wee bit. And we thought we could get a go. I think with the young guys in the team, that was a big call for Jimmy. Put the young guys in, starting them. And I think the reason for that was because Danny was out. Danny had a broke his foot. So that was the reason for starting the young guys.
Do you think that added freshness that Celtic didn't have? Because they had players like Mowbray, Nicholas, Walker, who were kind of getting on a bit in the years, and they struggled to kind of keep up, especially getting into extra time. Do you think that?
I think they ran a mock in extra time. I think we probably deserved, without having really any clear-cut chances, they ran a mock. I think we dominated. I think the young guys, I think the Celtic fans then seen it turning, and if they can hold on to penalties, they take their chances. But I've got to confess, Ian, when it went to 2-1, the 86th minute, I took centre with Daz. I went, like, well, Daz, this is a, we're dead unlucky now. She's dead unlucky. And this cauldron, you know, because the Celtic fans are going daft.
Yeah.
He went, we're not finished yet. And I remember Jason Dare getting the ball at the right-hand side. And I don't know what I was doing. I just thought, I'll just make this run. I'll just run somewhere, you know, to try and go on. The ball, fatigue setting in. I'd battled with Mowbray and Mark McNally, another pal of mine, way back. And battled away with him. Just trying to, any ball that came up, all my job was to do was get the young kids into the game. I didn't flick the ball on for Daz. I just try and batter in and hold the ball up and lay it off. And it was physically draining. I mean, physically. And I just thought, I'll just run out here, you know. Jason Dare cut on his left foot and hit that shot, you know. I thought, I remember saying, but the shooting for there for. And Big Mars spilled it and Daz poked it in. And it was euphoria. I mean, complete euphoria. That was it. The whole centenary stand at Ibrox went bananas. And at the start of the game, Ian, when we walked out, that gave us a lift. Because Celtic had the three sides and we had one side, but we had that one right across for the tunnel. And see, when you walked out and you seen the Wraith supporters that night, or that afternoon, sorry, gave you a lift. We were 10 foot tall. And we started the game really well with Stevie Crawford. But then, as you say, the veterans came into it for Celtic. Walker, Nicholas, and scored, and we thought that was it. But Daz popped up. See, he heeded it in his nose as usual, but that was an instinctive goal. Instinctive. Brilliant. Done it all season for us. The run-up to that cup final, I think it was something like 16 games, or scored every game. We started to motor. I said to you earlier on, before the final, the first rounds, we hadn't really started that well. We were the favourites in that league. But the turning point for me was Clyde Bank. We were in about the quarters just before the semis. We went down to Clyde Bank and we battered them. And we went on this run, and Daz was battling the goals, and I thought, we've got a chance. And then with 4 minutes to go, you think you've not got a chance. And then he pops up, and you've got a chance again. It's extra time. I'm saying to myself, surely I've got a chance here, come on. But thinking back to the game, it's a bit of a cloud. You're kind of, you're too involved in it. I don't think there was any clear-cut chances. It was all about possession and breaks, and people are getting tired. And when it goes to penalty kicks, you're physically and mentally exhausted in that game.
What was your emotions like during penalty kicks? Were you relaxed? You think we've got this, or were you kind of...
No, I just says to Jimmy, come here, mate, how are you? I says, I can't help, two calves are gone. I says, my army's ready to go. He says, right, so Big Jerry Dot was working on me, and a couple of other boys, and he picked his five, and then you step up to take the penalties, and you're all just standing in the line. I can't remember even if, you know, that way where they stand in the line with their arms round each other, and everybody's kind of, waiting on their turn, waiting on the next one. I can't remember where we were standing, and obviously on the halfway line, Ian. Penalties started, and they're all their penalties are trickling in. I'm thinking, man, come on, Tomo. And then obviously Paul McStay takes the last penalty, and Scott Thompson, our angle from it, we're looking straight down, me and Sean Dennis again, standing next to each other. We're looking straight down, so you can't see the angle when Tomo saves it, and it bounces up, and we think it's went in. But the Wraith fans that were at an angle cheered. And I don't know what happened after that, quite honestly. I think a couple of them were just worrying about who's taking the next penalty. I think that's the thing. Like, oh, Jesus, this is coming to us here, you know. I'm going to have to not walk and walk right up and put it in the spot. But incidentally, I forgot to mention to you, the semi-final penalty shootout, Wee Potter threw the ball up in the air. Alan Lawns just threw it right up in the air to Alan Lawns, and Alan caught it. Had to step back a bit, just to knock him out of his stride. Very clever for a young man. Tomo done the same. I think Tomo done the same leading up to the penalty. I didn't think Paul McStay's penalty was particularly bad. Some of yours were worse, but went in. But Tomo saved it, and it was just euphoria, man. So Willem Dafoe and platoon, you know what I mean? Running about, doing slides in the knees and jumping on top of each other. I didn't even know if that was it finished. I just seen everybody running and thought, we've won it. We've actually won the cup. And it's not till later on that kind of gets a hold of you and you realise that you've done it. And you look round the three sides where the Celtic fans were, and there's nobody there. A few stayed back, right enough. But my only regret is no playing at Hampden. That's my only regret. Brilliant Ibrox, great stadium, great to win it there, fantastic atmosphere, but it's the old history thing, you know. I'd love to have played that at Hampden. Would we have won the game? Might have been different, Ian. But that's the only regret that I've got in that cup run.
Well, what if we said to you, Ali, I'm sorry, you can't play at Hampden, it's got to be at Ibrox, but to make it up for you, you go to the Olympic Stadium in Munich. Was that all right? Would that make it up?
Aye, that was a draw. I was kind of falling out of favour a wee bit of the team at that time. I'd been in to see Jimmy about a new contract after winning that. I was injured for a few weeks after that, but I couldn't walk for a number of days. They thought it was a stomach muscle. Missed a few games. And the lead up to the next season, managed to get back in. It was a wee kind of strange relationship between Jimmy there. So he left me out a couple of times. Managed to play at Easter Road. We threw a couple of rounds. I got injured against the Cranes. Didn't play the second leg. Played over in the Faroes. Managed to strike up a good relationship with Stevie Crawford again, obviously, because Daz was away. So we're looking good. And obviously the draw comes and you get Bayern Munich and it's Sky Sports. And playing at Easter Road. They moved to Easter Road first. Done particularly well against them. Get beat. Klinsmann, outstanding. I mean, what a player. One of the guys done a wee survey on him and says he just doesn't walk on the park, but doesn't stop moving. He's watched him. and he scored a couple of times.
That
day. Thought everything was okay. And then the return leg, Jimmy never played me. And that's the biggest down in my whole career, when he named the team that night. For some reason, Tony Rogge played. And brilliant for wee Danny's free kick, brilliant for the club, supporters loved it. It was a great experience. John Pierre Papin asked me how I wasn't playing. That's true. Why are you not playing? Says, do you ask a manager? That was quite surreal, you know. And bumping into guys like Rummenigge and Augenthaler and all these guys that you watched, you know, a different level. Then you're actually seeing them. It was brilliant for all the boys. Absolutely brilliant. And then that free kick puts his one up. They toyed with us at Easter Road. They were far better than us, you know. And they actually, I don't know if you know this, but they actually try to get the ball swapped before the game for Umbro balls or to their Adidas, because they flew a bit quicker. And they try to get the ball changed. Wouldn't have made any difference, I don't think, because the second leg, it was all about them. I remember the arrogance of Thomas Helmer, who was marking me when I came on. I had a wee chance, and it was Adidas ball, and it came off my chest, and I thought, normally I'd put these away. And Can came out, and I gave him a right, I clocked him. And I thought I should have scored there. They make it two each. But they were just too good in the end for us. Brilliant for wee Danny, and great for the Wraith fans at the time, but they were just too good for us, and it was a great experience. And absolutely fantastic. But playing in that Olympic Stadium, which isn't anymore. We watched World Cup finals there, Ian. Watched the Kaiser lifting the cup there, and all these great players. Van Basten's goal, that's where I missed my chance. Van Basten's volley against Russia, mind that now?
Yep.
I mean, one of the best goals ever.
Do you remember Sergei Boltacha Jr.? Played for St Mirren, went down to Millwall. He ended up working with me, and I was talking to him about, I said, oh, that Van Basten goal, one of the best goals ever. And he went, and my dad was meant to be marking him.
Oh, I mean, by the way, he was actually saying to him, probably hit it, because it was, the angle was ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. But in that stadium, you know, and so many teams have played in there, and it was brilliant. It was just brilliant. Me and Ronnie Coyle roomed, and you could look out our window and look at the spider's webs for our room. And then the biggest one was the Olympic Stadium, but the wee gymnastic one, they're all webbed as well.
Mm-hmm.
It was like it was a spider's webs. Big Alan McAnally told us that when he came in to see us. And great experience. I mean, absolutely brilliant. Really good. You're in the big time. That was a big time. Wraith Rovers were in the big time. And again, to go back there now, there's no many wee teams in a wee part of Scotland get to play in that. Fantastic.
Well, I think ending it on the big time is probably the best way to conclude this episode. I have to say thank you very much for joining us. You're shot from the hip, both in your cadenceness and also with your 161 career goals, which you allege might be more.
Maybe.
Join us next week for our journey into the annals of Scottish football. Our website is csi.com. You can find our socials. Until next week, cheer bye.